The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Okay. Good morning. I was trying to become Edward for a while, but people still know me better as Ed. I thought I could become more Ed by going Edward, you know. But anyway, it's I appreciate being here. I've been friends with Gil, although I don't see him much. Going back, I don't know, 30 years or so or more now, to the 70s when he came to Zen Center. I think it was 1987. Gil was head of the meditation hall at Green Gulch. We called it Eno. And I was there one day and he said, "Ed, I'm going to IMS in the fall. Want to come?" And I thought about it for a moment and said, "Sure." So we were at the 3-month course at in Barrie in 1987. So called together, you know, we didn't talk much. But as you probably know, sometimes at the, you know, in Zen, you have an assigned seat. And it's got, we have little charts. And it says, there's a name at each seat. And then if you're not there, we come looking for you. So that's sometimes known as the Zen police. So when you start doing Vipassana, it's very relaxing. There's no police. But at one point, I was in my room for a couple of days, and then nobody comes. So you start to wonder, does anybody know I'm alive, or do they care? Or anyway, so sometimes at the Vipassana retreats, I mean, there's 100 people, or 90 or 100 people at this event. Sometimes there's 8 or 9 people sitting in the hall. Gil and I would be 2 of those. And because, you know, it's up to you how you're going to practice in Vipassana. We're not, you know, nobody comes looking for you. And, you know, the person who comes looking for you may be polite or not. They might just say, "How are you doing?" And notice that you weren't there. We were expecting you. You did say you were going to be coming. And we kind of have a little chat. And are you okay? Would you like some? Do you need some food? You know, so we're going to visit with you a little bit. We try to train ourselves to be polite in this, you know, rather than get your butt in the meditation hall. It's kind of sweet, you know, it's kind of nice. And this year at Tassajara, just down at Tassajara, and we usually have, you know, it's a meditation hall with cushions and with platforms and cushions along the wall, and we sit facing the wall. And then in each corner, there's one chair. So 4 chairs for the meditation hall. And this year at Tassajara, there was a chair in each corner, and then there was another chair behind it, and in some instances, 3 chairs lined up in the, there's not much space for chairs. So it's a mostly sit on the floor. And at IMS, they would tell us, you know, if it's hard to sit on the floor, sit in a chair. And if the chair is challenging for you, you know, we have some easy chairs in the library across the hall. They're very plush and cushy, and, you know, you've got an armrest, and, you know, so make yourself at home. And if that doesn't work, we have some, you know, if you don't want to be out in public while you're sitting, then we have some little private rooms we could give you and so forth. So they, you know, would try to make it very possible for people to sit. But my roommate at IMS was writing his memoirs, so he wasn't going to meditation at all. You know, after about 6 or 7 weeks, about halfway through, one of his teachers in the interviews kind of said, "You know, you might want to sit a little bit." But anyway, just to say that I'm happy to be here and, you know, so to speak, you know, friends of Gil's are friends of mine. Thank you for being here. As you can tell, I have a particular style of talk, and some people find this, you know, I can't help it. you know, what am I going to do? I'm me, okay? And I have a particular philosophy about this. You know, people have, or aesthetic. You know, part of what we're doing in our life is we have an aesthetic. And then sometimes because you practice or work on something in your life, your aesthetic can change. And part of changing your life and your consciousness and your response to the world is changing your aesthetic. Or your aesthetic is going to have to give. So my aesthetic is, you know, I've also done some improv. That's not on the list. You see, I'm busy. But I study improv too. So some of my friends, recently one of my friends, Patricia Madsen Ryan, who taught at Stanford Improv for 31 years and lives in, Montara, one of those places, Marina Del Rey or something over on the coast. But north of Half Moon Bay, you know. Montara. So in her book, there's a chapter on, part of what they teach in improv is show up. And she says, show up, don't prepare. You know, because that's a different aesthetic, like prepare so that it's going to be perfect and just the way it should be and get it all, worked. So you don't have to be anxious. You know what you're going to do. You do what you know, what you're going to say, and you've got it all worked out, and it's a great presentation. And so my aesthetic is, that's what I'm following. And then I call that, instead of improv, I call that Zen. But other Zen people say, no, you prepare. And you want to, offer something that's clear and straightforward. So I do what I do, and then some people say, oh, it's so confused and chaotic. And then other people say, well, it's whimsical and poetic. and some people say, well, you can't follow what he's talking about. And other people say, well, that's the charm of it, and so forth. And I've been finding this out, especially the last week or two, how people have different takes on what I do. Am I responsible for that? I don't think so, And this is related to if you cook a meal, and, eventually I'm going to talk to you a little bit about Zen Master Dogen's instructions to the cook. If you cook a meal, is everybody going to like it? So usually what you do is you get out a recipe, you do what you're told, and if it doesn't work and everybody's not happy, you say, well, that was a crummy recipe, I guess. Because in theory, there's a recipe that you can follow for living a human life that nobody has any complaints and everybody loves it. Has that worked yet? Have you managed to get to that level of performance and accomplishment in your life where nobody complains, everybody's happy, you're following the recipe, it's coming out the way it should, and everybody applauds? So that hasn't worked yet, so we call that the first noble truth. Hasn't worked for me yet either. 43 years of Zen practice and I've got sciatica for the first time. That's just not fair. Anyway. I did, by the way, want to mention to you, speaking of 43 years of, Zen practice, going back to 1965. And, my computer died a couple of weeks ago. And I have now a computer guru. I'm not very savvy when it comes to tech, and computers. And my computer hasn't been very computer literate either. Because, you need to have a computer that's less than 3 years old or else it's not literate any longer. Mine is going on 8 or 10 years, So actually, my computer guru is also my Zen student. So we have an exchange going. I give him Dharma, he gives me computer Dharma. I give him Buddhist Dharma, we have an exchange. So he had told me, he had warned me last January, you might want to go to the Apple store and see if next time you want to get an Apple instead of a PC. This time when we went to the Apple store after my computer died, I had told him about what happened the first time, and he said, now before we go in, Ed, let's just sit outside here on this bench and talk about what we're going to do once we get in there. I had explained to him what happened the first time, and we sat outside for 20, 30 minutes talking about what we were going to do in the Apple store. You probably want to get that extended warranty because you also get classes and tutoring and so forth. But when I first went in, it was like January, early February, and probably most of you are like savvy and hip enough. I don't know. Maybe it's a younger generation, but if you've been in an Apple store, there's, you know, the energy is like, and they have, now they have iTV, whatever that's called. So they've got the, you know, you can get the iChannel and get all your movies downloaded from Apple. And then they have a big screen TV and that's going, and they have computers going, and everybody is just like, there's just so much energy in the store and everybody's so kind of hyper. And so I go in there and I have no idea what to do, and somebody's kind of helping me for a little while and he disappears, and then a woman comes up to me and she says, are you being helped? And I said, well, yeah, I had some help, but, you know, I don't know really what I'm doing here, and I'm feeling kind of overwhelmed, actually, and by all the energy in the store. And and she's looking at me and I'm kind of on the verge of crying, you know, I'm so overwhelmed. And she says, you know, you might want to try meditating. She said, it's been very good for me. It's been so... been so helpful. I said, really? She said, yes, I have a guru here in Marin. And okay. Yes, maybe I'll try that. you know, my... Excuse me. My latest passion, by the way, is I'm studying now fingerprints. I just find all these things so interesting. And, you know, Zen Master Dogen says, don't do that stuff. Just sit. So, you know, so then some people say, he's not really a Zen teacher. Or some people say, that's nice, Ed, but it's not Zen. And then other people say, you're practicing Zen light. And that's, you know, L-I-T-E and not L-I-G-H-T, you know. So I'm finding out about myself and other people by looking at fingerprints. And I'm just finding it fascinating. And it turns out my life lesson, which here I've been practicing all these years and I never realized what my life lesson is, it's called guilt issues. May I share this with you? Is that okay? But if I keep talking like this, we'll never get to, you know, Dogen and, you know, real Buddhism and... By the way, you know, my name for my school of Zen is the Get Real School of Zen. You know, like, being real is, like, to me, being real would be various things, moment after moment, various things happen. And have you been able to control them yet? Have you been able to tell which ones to arise and which ones not to? Have you managed that yet? I haven't either. So that's what I call get real. And get real then means you would have, from time to time, you would have feelings. And you would have thoughts, and then you would have sensations, and you would have desires, and like, get real. What did you think? How did you think you were supposed to be able to make it, you know, be for yourself and other people? So my issue, it turns out, is I've thought for years that, you know, if you have any problems with me, like I was just down at Tassajara, and I don't understand this, you know, but 43 years, of Zen practice, and I go down there, and in 43 years, they have not yet seen through me. Do you understand? I'm still concerned about this. You know, that they're going to see through me and realize, but in the meantime, that I'm not actually a Zen person. You know, but in the meantime, I'm staying in the, they're putting me up in the abbot's cabin. They're inviting me to lead the service in the meditation hall and go around to altars in the morning and open the, you know, and they're inviting me to teach classes and things. Like, I knew something. And I know nothing. I'm a, you know, I'm a Zen failure. I mean, I don't know how to control my, you know, temperament. So some of you have seen my movie. Some of you may see it. If I have a chance, I may get out some DVDs to peddle. You know, I'm a Zen teacher and a peddler. You know. But in the movie, you know, I'm shaking a bottle of vinegar and nothing's coming out of it. And there's this huge bowl of salad I'm trying to get vinegar into. And there's this plastic thing in the top of the vinegar bottle. Why do they do that to people? I mean, don't you get a bottle of vinegar so you can get vinegar out of it? After you take the cap off and then, you know, you could get some vinegar out? No, because there's this plastic thing so that it'll just dribble out because you're not, people, you know, are not intelligent enough and capable enough and wouldn't want to just put their thumb over the cap to have it be less, you know, because your thumb would get wet with vinegar. And also, it might contaminate the vinegar. Something from your thumb might go into the bottle, or I don't know why, but, you know, they probably got sued. Too much vinegar came out into my salad, and so they put on this plastic cap that won't let any vinegar out. And so I'm in the movie, I'm taking a sharp knife, and I'm going to cut this thing off of there, and why are they doing this to people? And after all these years of Zen practice, you know, and so some people say, again, you see, some people are going to say, Ed, you're so human and you're so self-revealing and I appreciate that so much, and your being you encourages me that I could be me. And then other people go like, what is your problem? 43 years of Zen practice and you still have a temperament like that? You know, is that Zen practice good for anything? I mean, have you tried Vipassana? Yeah. Have you tried therapy? Yeah. Well, which kind of therapy was that? You know? And I've done cognitive therapy and behavioral therapy and, you know, whatever. And I'm still like this. I haven't gotten fixed yet. And not everybody likes my act. So what am I going to do? You know? So I've been aiming all these years to have somebody, everybody like my act. And that's called guilt issues. It turns out that's a low-ranking left middle finger. and so that was going to be, that's going to be my problem going back to 5 months in utero. So we all got issues, you know, of one kind or another. It's what you're here to do, work on them. But I thought I might actually be able to work this out without, you know, and so that I, you know, if I said, you know, if people don't like it, I'm sorry. I apologize. I will endeavor to, you know, clear this up. And this sort of culminated last week at Tassajara, where I said to a woman, this is how intense this can get if you have this issue in your life. And I'm 3 times 21. I just had a birthday and it's a pivotal one, 3 times 21. And I was having an intense discussion with the woman and she said, well, I've said everything I want to say. I said, okay, well, thank you. And is there anything you want to say, she said to me. And I said, yes, there is. I would like to wish you, offer my warm wishes for your health and happiness, for your joy and well-being, you know, for your growth and wisdom and compassion, for your, the full flowering of enlightenment in your life. And she looked at me and she said, that is so insincere. What do you do at that point? So I got hooked. But you see, at some point, you know, All you can do is you can be you and you say, well, you know what? I made a sincere wish. I made a sincere wish for your health and happiness. I wanted to offer you some warm wishes. And, you know, I think that's the best I can do. And, and it's up to you whether you receive them or don't receive them or how you experience them, what you think of me, what you think of my warm wishes. You could take them in or not. And that's out of my control. Do you understand how that's out of my control? And it's like if I cook, I can't please everybody. Everybody has their own sort of likes and dislikes. But instead of just saying, so, you know, I've had this kind of conversation with Zen teachers. And so instead of saying, I've offered you my good wishes, you can do what you want with this experience. And if you think it's insincere, okay. If you receive them, fine. And it's up to you how you receive me in your life. But, you know, what I get caught in is I want to please her. I want to make her happy. I want to take care of it for her. I was with a friend of mine because of my previous conversation with this particular person. I had invited a friend of mine who's a therapist to sit in with us. Is it just me, the way that this woman is responding to me, or what's going on here? You know, so mysterious how these things happen. And, you know, of course this issue comes to me because this is my issue. Anyway, at one point my friend said to her, you know, it might be that you're just looking at everything through a lens of insincerity. Is that a possibility, do you think? And the woman said, did you really want me to answer that? And my friend, the therapist, said, you know, very, you know, leaning forward, yes, I would. And this person said, well, I'm not going to. At which point I did one of these sort of Marshall Rosenberg, you know, nonviolent communication things. And I said, I'm wondering if you could let me know how I could give you warm wishes in a way that you felt was sincere. Maybe you could teach me how to do that. And she said, well, you're going to have to do it without smiling, like you were. Because somehow when I was smiling, you know, I'm wishing you warm wishes and I'm feeling warmth and, you know, warm-heartedness and towards her, and I'm smiling. And for her, that's like, you're so insincere. And you're going to have to do that without smiling. And I started to do it and I almost laughed. And she said, at the silliness of all of this, and she said, see, you can't do it. And then I managed to... be very straight-faced and offer my warm wishes. And she said, thank you. And I said, you're welcome. Goodbye. But this is so amazing. So I want to do enough for you that you're not unhappy, you're not displeased, you're not criticizing me, and it's impossible, and then I get depressed. Is that simple or what? And Buddhism, and, you know, so sometimes we need to study stuff. I mean, I've been studying for more than 40 years. And Zen and Vipassana and therapies and, you know, improv theater and changing my handwriting to change your life and whatever. You know. And it worked, too. You know, I changed my handwriting and, you know, I stopped making the self-sabotage F. And in the next year, my life got unstuck and 3 major pivotal changes happened in my life. So I'm a devotee now and I teach people how to change their handwriting. You know, so... But I just want to tell you, you know, your life lessons you know, are going to go on until you get it, you know. And for me, I need to allow you to be unhappy with me and to criticize me and thank you for noticing what a blind donkey I am. And I'm going to have to let you do that, you know. So if any of you notice what a blind donkey I am, and, you know, in Zen, in other words, I'm going to be blind to how you are receiving me. I'm wishing, you know, all beings joy and happiness, and I often pray, you know, I make this prayer to myself, you know, and especially when I travel. May all beings be happy. And then I'm looking at the people in the airport and on the plane and people with their screaming babies and whatever, you know, and I'm wishing every, you know, all beings happiness, joy, well-being, you know, may you be happy and healthy, free from suffering, may you live in compassion, may you grow in wisdom, whatever, and I feel better when I do that, you know, but some people are going to look at me and whatever, you're going to have some judgment, and it's out of my control, and I'm going to, you know, I'm working on allowing you to do that. Do you understand? Now, would you like to have question and answers, or would you like a little Zen talk? Any thoughts?
Cooking.
Okay. Cooking. By the way, I was going to mention to those of you out there, you know, there are a few seats in here, but you're doing okay out there?
Okay.
Oh, yeah, okay, yeah. Yeah, I know. I appreciate it. I came in here like, oh, my goodness, somebody is sitting right in front of me. Awesome. So the passage I wanted to share with you this morning was Zen Master Dogen says, when you cook rice or prepare vegetables, do it using your own eyes, with your own hands. Making sincere effort. Don't be idle for a moment. Don't be careful about one thing and careless about something else. Do not miss your opportunity, even if it's just a drop of water in the ocean of merit. Do not fail to add even one particle of dirt to the summit of the mountain of wholesome deeds. So I've been following this for years. Apparently recently at Green Gulch, our center, you know, at Green Gulch, somebody I know was there in the kitchen, and, you know, someone was cleaning out a bowl in the kitchen. So this means don't waste even a grain of rice. Somebody was cleaning out a bowl of some sort, and they went to stop and finish cleaning it out, and somebody else said to them, you're going to have to Ed Brown it better than that. Meaning that, you know, to really clean it out even more thoroughly, this is getting now to be a verb in English. Because I've endeavored over the years to actually follow and put into practice in my life what Dogen says. And then people get annoyed with me when I suggest that they might do that too. And then especially if they haven't done it, and then I can, you know, you could clean it out more than that. And then they say, you're so judgmental and critical. Okay, well. So I'm studying. I'd like to be able to offer a teaching without being judgmental and critical. This is very interesting. How do you do this? You know. And it actually may be that when I offer a teaching, somebody is going to be hurt or upset in some way. I don't know. I don't know how to do this. You know, I've been studying this for years, and it seems to me there's two skills here. You know, if you have a meal, on one hand, and when you're working, on one hand, you want to be at ease and gracious and wholehearted, and on the other hand, you want to be, you know, very exact about what you do. And is it possibly very exact and big mind, big heart, easy feeling? And then be exact, or when you have a big heart and generous mind, like, who cares about a few pieces of grain or some vegetables in the bottom of the bowl. But you can go into kitchens, and there's two cookies in the bottom of the bowl that's going into the sink. And two cookies a day over the course of the year is, you know, whatever, 700 and something cookies. And if it's every day, it adds up, all those cookies. And, you know, one of the things I do, sort of embarrassing, but just as an example of this, I've gotten, in my lifetime, I will have saved over 20,000 plastic bags, maybe 30,000. Because those plastic bags, my local natural food store, Good Earth, said we contributed whatever it was, 3 tons of plastic bags to the environment last year, whatever they, you know, their thing is. And they stopped having any plastic bags out for a while. But I have the plastic bags, and after I use them, I rinse them out, and then I put them on wine bottles on the floor, and then after a while, I shake them, and then I turn them out and shake them, and I dry them out, and then when they're dried, the only way I'm going to get them back to the store is I fold them in half. And I fold them in half lengthwise, because then you can push the air out of them, and then I fold them up in thirds, and then they go into a Ziploc plastic bag, which is then all flat, with a whole stack of plastic bags, and they go back to the store with me. And so, you know, 10 bags a week is, over a year is 500 bags. 10 years is 5,000 bags. 20 years is, 10,000 bags. And that's a minimum, 10 bags a week. Anyway, I'm working on it. But other people say, we can afford to throw away a plastic bag. What's your problem? So some people have a problem with this. I don't know. But coming back to Dogen, and this is so interesting to me. And Dogen says, "See with your own eyes, work with your own hands." And this, to me, is as much as anything what practice is, what Zen is, what Vipassana is. Can you? Zen has a little more emphasis on this than Vipassana generally, but can you take your consciousness that normally has a hangout in your head, behind the eyes or the top of the brain stem or someplace, you can find out where your consciousness is hanging out by extending it out into your arm, feeling the tips of your fingers with your consciousness for a little bit, and then you let go of that and then extend your consciousness out in your left hand to your fingertips. Do a little bit of that, and then, ask yourself, where did it go in between those times I was intentionally sending it out someplace? Where was it hanging? So we have a hangout for our consciousness that is the default mode for consciousness. It's hanging out, and that's usually a place in the head that likes to think and gets involved in how to protect itself and make itself safe in that hangout in the head, and basically then happiness is not really having to relate to anything. And then when you start having to relate to anything, it's like, well, I don't know what to do. How do I take care of this? So Dogen says, look with your eyes. Don't waste a grain. Use your hands. Do things with your body. And find out how to be, a human being. And I tell people, there's a difference between, mostly people come into cooking with the idea, and this is not just cooking, but our lives. Like I started out in my talk, there's a recipe for how to do it. If you follow the recipe and do what you're supposed to, it's going to come out okay. Everybody will like it. And this is also diet plans. And, there was a woman who wrote a letter in the Sun magazine, and she said she had studied and identified 15 people who had lost a significant amount of weight, 20 pounds or more, and kept it off for 5 years or longer. And she was interested in what was their secret, because diet plans notoriously don't work. And it turned out they had one thing in common. They each figured out for themselves how to do it. There was no recipe. Just do what I tell you and you're going to be fine. And then if it doesn't work, you blame the recipe or the diet plan, or you say, I have too much resistance. I can't do what I'm told. But why would you give up your own capacity to see with your eyes and do things with your hands and smell with your nose and taste with your tongue and just abandon that to do what somebody else is telling you? So anyway, the woman wrote a book, you know, about dieting, and, you know, you could figure it out for herself, and she can't get it published. Because everybody says, nobody wants to know that they have to figure it out for themselves. Write a book about dieting. And tell them what they need to do. So this is, you know, the business I'm in, too. I'm actually trying to tell you, you know, go ahead, you know, you've got a life, you've got eyes, you've got hands, find out how to do stuff. And it's not just your eyes and your hands, but it's the rest of your body and your mind and your, you know, find out how to use the, you know, the gifts you've been given. The gift of, you know, being a human being, the gift of being you. Find out how to do that. And sometimes people aren't going to like it. So I tell people simple things, you know, taste what you put in your mouth. This is, you know, practice. Taste what you put in your mouth. Rather than, and, you know, Vipassana, you know, I used to go to Vipassana retreats with Jack Kornfield and Howie Cohn and James Perez and I forget who else, but in San Rafael at the Santa Sabina Center back before Spirit Rock. And one year, Nina Weiss was there. Do you all know? So Nina's another improv person I've studied with. So we happened to be sitting next to each other in the Buddha Hall, and then she noticed this one person at lunch enjoying his food rather than taste, 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 chew, chew, swallow, swallow. And I instead of doing taste, taste, chew, chew, swallow, swallow, I do savor, enjoy, receive blessings, taste the earth and the sky, whatever, you know, it's kind of poetic for me. You know, widen your poetic imagination rather than practice Vipassana. So Nina would sit next to me at lunch. I'd get my lunch and go outside. She'd get hers and come out and sit next to me. So that's how we got to know each other. But there is something, you know, so, and then Dogen says, you know, just bring your full awareness. Don't be careful about some things and careless about others. You know, take care of each moment of your life. And that's seeing what needs to be done and, you know, using your eyes and your heart and your hands and responding to things that are in front of you. And do the next thing. Take care of the next moment. And we don't know what will happen or if it will turn out okay, but you are giving yourself to the next, you know, to this situation, to this moment. And sometimes this can seem, as he says, you know, do not fail to add even a drop of water to the ocean of merit. So a lot of the times, you know, to wash a dish or to sweep the floor or to clean the vegetables or whatever it is, you know, just like, this is too much. I have better things to do in my life, like Oprah or whatever, you know, like whatever it is that are the supposed better things to do in your life, or the things that you would prefer to do, or the things where you don't actually have to relate to anything and you can just consume. You know, we have a whole culture based on this. So we're all working on this stuff, how to be a human being and show up and take care of a moment rather than being busy of what's it going to do for me? How can I give myself to the situation? So Dogen says, even if it seems so small, go ahead and don't miss the opportunity for that drop of water in the ocean of merit or to add one speck of dirt to the summit of the mountain of wholesome deeds. So this is Zen Master Dogen's encouragement. Well, I think it's about time to stop, and it's 10:45, so we're going to have to do the question and answer period informally, I guess. We're going to stop our formal part of this event, so thank you. thank you for your warm hearts and your sincere intention to smile. It's sort of ironic because in my movie, one of the most scenes that people most frequently ask about is there's a scene where I'm talking about teapots and how the teapots over the years have gotten dented. You know, and how we all over the years get dented. And at some point I start to cry. And then people say, why are you crying over dented teapots? Like, you know, so people have all... And then other people are like, oh, that was the most touching part of the movie. And, okay. Anyway, thank you for your good hearts and your warm, your good, your sincere practice. Blessings.